This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Happy New Year! 2023 is here, and we're getting the year off to a good start here in the Times Union newsroom. Coming up on this episode of The Eagle, we'll go over the top headlines.
You know, she may have met with some foul play, and that's based on some of the evidence that they have collected, but right now it's still a big question mark.
And we'll look back at the illustrious career of our own Jay Jochnowitz, who's retiring from his long-held post as editorial page editor.
And yeah. I said, look, we're not cops. And that's as far as I got. And he, right through the window, punched me in the face.
Oh my gosh!
This is The Eagle, a Times Union podcast. A look inside our newsroom. I'm Jessica Marshall.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Welcome to The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall. All right, let's discuss now what appeared in the Times Union and on timesunion.com this week. We are here now with Times Union Managing Editor for News, Susan Mihalik. We're going to go over the top headlines this week. Let's start with what's happening in Congress, which is subject to change as we are talking on Thursday morning, January 5th here. And the House is set to adjourn a couple of hours from now, and things might change. But I want to focus on how that has all affected the New York delegation, or what role the New York delegation has played in this drama that we have watched unfold this week. What can you tell us?
Well, what I can tell you is that North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who represents the 21st district and is head of the GOP conference in the House, was responsible for nominating her colleague Kevin McCarthy to be Speaker of the House on Tuesday, and the vote has not gone in his favor so far. As of Thursday morning, there have been 6 House votes between Tuesday and Wednesday, and they have not emerged with a leader, so it's thrown everything into mayhem in Washington, D.C.
Something that hasn't happened, right, for 100 years, they're saying?
Yeah, it's been, I guess, since 1923, we haven't had a problem like this. This has thrown everything into chaos for the House Republicans. And, you know, Stefanik's whole game has been to try to keep everybody on message. You know, going into, you know, last week the story was about the congressman-elect George Santos from Long Island, who made up, you know, his resume, and Stefanik had apparently been, you know, a backer of his. And that was last week's news.
You know, old news.
Stefanik was silent on that matter. And, you know, last week it was all about staying on message. And apparently this week, you know, she's responsible for, you know, helping her party, you know, put together its messaging. And it looks like there's a breakaway faction of far right wingers that are not toeing the line. And she's apparently having difficulty keeping her party on message. And, you know, her name has even surfaced as, you know, a potential, you know, is somebody who could become speaker. But as the days have unfolded, her name doesn't seem to be out there so much right now. And of course, she, you know, was first very moderate when she first came, you know, to her office, and eventually, you know, fell in line behind Trump. Kevin McCarthy has Trump's support, but that doesn't seem to be helping him at all. So it should be interesting to see, you know, what happens in the days to come. You know, the fact that the Republicans have not been able to elect a speaker has, you know, meant that the newly elected Congress people can't be sworn into office and, you know, no work is being done in Congress because of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of repercussions there.
Yeah, so more to come on this. It's one of these things that I think a lot of people are paying close attention to. It signifies how the Republican Party, is really in disarray right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, stick by timesunion.com for the latest on that. We will all be watching it closely. All right, let's turn over now to Schenectady County, where the case of a missing 14-year-old, we're still searching for her. What's going on there?
This young woman, her name is Samantha Humphrey, has been missing now for about 6 weeks. Earlier this week, state police and city police were out searching again along the Mohawk. She was last seen or captured on video surveillance at a park near the river at the end of November. And the Schenectady Police Department put out a statement this week to say that, you know, their investigation is continuing. With the warmer temperatures of late, they figured they should, you know, check the river again because, you know, ice and snow have receded. And, you know, they just still don't have anything. You know, they say that, the case is extremely active. You know, there's concern that, you know, she may have met with some foul play. And that's based on some of the evidence that they have collected. But right now, it's still a big question mark, you know, and we continue to follow that story. And right now, there's just a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. But they were, you know, continuing their search, you know, in a very visible way at the beginning of the week. You know, they had, you know, helicopters in the air and, you know, boats in the water. But still, nothing has turned up on that case.
Mm. Well, we will be following that one closely as well. Any developments there? All right. And finally, let's turn it to some better news, some good news, a story that did really well for us online this week. A family from Cairo made it to all 300-something Stewart's shops, right?
That is correct. In a move to do something kind of fun and quirky, a family of three from the Hudson Valley decided that they were going to make it a goal in 2022 to visit all 358 Stewart's shops. And for those of you who may be listening from outside the capital region, Stewart's is a locally owned chain of convenience stores that, you know, runs throughout a good portion of New York State and into Vermont. And this family, their last name is Freeman, a couple along with their four-year-old son, who's named Cody, they decided that they were going to spend 2022 visiting all the Stewart stores. They were apparently inspired when they heard a story about some folks who, you know, visited every Cracker Barrel. I don't even know what that could have been all over the country for what all I know. But at any rate, so these folks decided that could be a fun thing to do for their family and piled into the car every weekend, traveling from their Greene County home, you know, all over the state. And they said that they had a lot of quality family time in pursuit of this goal. They set some rules for themselves. They had to, all three of them had to go inside every shop. They had to make some purchases for it to be a legitimate stop. Along the way, they apparently, you know, discovered lots of little towns that they never would have set foot in, from the Adirondacks. And, you know, they mentioned that one stop in Essex in the Adirondacks in particular was very memorable. You know, they spent a whole day there, you know, ate at a restaurant, swam in Lake Champlain, and just generally had a really great time, you know, connecting as a family. And one of the things that I learned from their story was that there is such a thing as peanut butter chocolate milk. That's one of the go-to items that they purchased while they were making their grand tour.
That's a new one for me too. I never heard of that one either.
I hear you. Well, you know, it probably goes hand in hand with the Stewart's famous peanut butter pandemonium ice cream, which I have to say I have tried. And if you haven't had it, you kind of need to try it.
Yes, yes. And go back and listen to our podcast where we interviewed Stewart's president, Gary Dake, about their win at the Dairy Expo for that, the World Dairy Expo for that flavor. It's a great episode, and it made me want to dive right into my freezer where I have a gallon of that ice cream.
Oh my goodness, Jess.
I know. And it's funny because over the holidays, we had reported on this story previously that Stewart's had opened an online shop for the first time where people could get hats and socks and other Stewart's branded gear.
You mean like a glittery coffee mug?
Yes, or a sparkly tumbler, exactly.
A sparkly tumbler. I think I saw that made its way into somebody's holiday gift haul.
It may or may not have made it into mine, yes. And I did see a lot of photos of folks sporting Stewart's gear over the holidays. So more Stewart stories, I'm sure, to come for us.
Yes, definitely. We love the Stewarts.
All right. Thank you so much, Susan. And we will check back in with you another time on this podcast.
All right. Thank you, Jessica. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
As always, you can learn more about all of the topics and issues that we discuss on this podcast at timesunion.com. After the break, editorial page editor Jay Jochnowitz has had a 35-year career with the Times Union. We'll hear about some of his favorite memories on the job, including the time he got punched in the face. Stay tuned.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Eagle, a Times Union podcast. I'm Jessica Marshall. Jay Jochnowitz started out as a city hall reporter for the Times Union in 1987. He moved through the ranks to become our editorial page editor, where he's been for the last decade and a half. He's moving on again to semi-retirement. Spoiler alert, we haven't heard the last of his opinions. I caught up with him to learn more about his new role and what the future holds in store.
Do you have a favorite memory of your time at the Times Union?
I have a persistent memory that is not a good one, actually, but it was kind of a journalistic moment. It taught me a lot. This goes back a long ways. This was back in the late 80s. The paper asked if we would, me and Joe Mahoney, who was the police reporter back then, would do a series on drugs. There was one night we went to a place in Schenectady where Joe had heard was a place where a lot of dealing happened, and thought, you know, we could maybe talk to some drug dealers. Something you don't just go and do, I found out. So we pull up in our car, and a guy comes over and said, what you want? You know, for some reason, I was not ready for that question. It was the most rookie moment of my career. And I was already a reporter for about 7 years at that point. And he repeated himself. He said, what you need? And I just figured I'd put the guy at ease because he was obviously getting tense. And yeah. I said, look, we're not cops. And that's as far as I got. And he right through the window punched me in the face.
Oh, my gosh.
Joe was such a straight arrow. It was funny. Lost it at that moment and popped the clutch and stalled the car.
Oh my goodness.
So here I am with this guy in the, you know, we're in the middle of a parking lot. He's standing there and his two buddies are starting to walk towards us. And Joe is just like, well, he's cursing. He got the car started and took off. I just kept my eyes on the guy the whole time. I, you know, just figured the only thing I could do was stare at him. And we kind of stared each other down and that was it. And they mentioned it in the series. Joanne wrote it like an intro to the series and mentioned that.
Were you okay?
Yeah, I was fine. You know, I had been studying martial arts for like almost a decade at that point. So I could take a punch, but it was a fascinating series. Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit further. Tell me how you got your start in the business and how you got your start at the Times Union.
I always liked the idea of journalism, really just kind of liked the idea and wanted to try it out. So in high school, I took a freshman, kind of journalism class. I think it was a sophomore at the time. And then the next year, I took journalism advanced course, and we got, we worked on the school newspaper, and I was one of the editors. I ended up being, oddly enough, the editorial page editor.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So I get out of college, and I think the world is waiting for Jay Jochnowitz to be a journalist. So I go down to Washington, and I apply to the Washington Post. And it's the worst application letter I think has ever been written. I cannot tell you how bad it was. And my mom, who was a very elegant writer, but not a journalistic writer, helped me write it. And that is why it was so bad. It was not a journalism cover letter. It was a, if you want to work for a publishing house or the Queen of England, it would be nice, but it was not a letter. So I didn't get on the Washington Post. I ended up repairing swimming pools all summer, which was a great job to learn how to do electrical work and plumbing and all that. And it helped in my future rehab career. Went home, got a job on a little trade paper in New York City, and worked there for a few months. And then a job opened up on my hometown paper. And I took it. It was a big pay cut. It was almost $100 a week, which was half my pay at that time. But I really wanted to work on community newspapers. So I worked there for a few years, kept looking for a daily job, and finally got one in Watertown. Worked real hard for 3 years. And so I was writing like 6 stories a day on average. It was incredible. They liked my work enough, they brought me down to Watertown, did some investigative work down there, did City Hall work, and then ended up getting a job interview. A friend of mine from my first weekly paper was working at the Times Union. Mm-hmm. And she told me the opening was there, and it was for City Hall. I went in, I had to go through multiple interviews, and I got the job, and it was...
You have had several positions here at the Times Union, several beats. Can you go through kind of a history of your roles at the Times Union?
Yeah, I started as a City Hall reporter in Albany, and mm-hmm. I just love that beat. Sometimes you get sick of a beat. I just never got sick of that beat.
What happened after that?
After, I think it was 2 or 3 years in the newsroom, the state bureau opened up. And I stayed there from, I think it was around 2000 to 2008.
So you were state editor for a while, and then you became the opinion editor, right?
I became editorial page editor. Howard Healy retired. I spent a career, it's one of the things I'm going to write about in the first column that I do, or one of my columns, is the idea of, the difference between opinion writing and news writing. And, I spent a career really trying not to inject my opinion into my reporting. News judgment and opinion are subtly different things. You're saying that's a story. Obviously, that's an opinion you have. It'd be very different to have an opinion every day about the, news of the day and issues and so forth. But I thought, I'll give it a try. Worst could happen is it doesn't work out. And it did, 14 years later, I guess it worked out.
So you've had a prolific career in the opinion section there as well. Yeah. Do you have any more favorite moments, maybe from the State House time or from the opinion time that you can recall?
There was one editorial with Trump in particular that is probably my favorite editorial of all the editorials I've ever done. Trump had won the 2016 election. We were headed toward the Electoral College vote. And I was like, well, why do we have an Electoral College vote? So I started doing some research on it. And I went back and I read the Federalist Papers, arguments on the Electoral College and why they had it. And I was blown away by how much Hamilton's reasoning for why we have an Electoral College fit the moment that we were in, possibly like no other moment in American history since. It was as if they wrote the Electoral College provisions specifically for Donald Trump. It was talking about the concern that they had of a person rising in politics who was proficient in the low arts of popularity, that there were times that it might be necessary for the electors to say, no, this person who was elected by the popular vote is not an acceptable leader and would be detrimental to the country. And I went in, I had no idea how the editorial board was going to react to this. I went in and I said, I think we should make the argument that the Electoral College should reject Donald Trump and appoint somebody else. And I'm not saying Hillary Clinton. I'm saying they could find another Republican. It could be John McCain. It could be, you know, anyone, any of the contenders besides Ted Cruz, let's say. And I said, and let me explain why. And I went through the Electoral College issues. I went through the Federalist Papers. And I could see Rex and Harry.
That's Rex Smith and Harry Rosenfeld, both former editors of the Times Union. And at the time, they were editorial board members.
I had never seen them pay attention like they were paying attention to this.
Uh-huh.
And I got done and I said, what do you think? And they were like, I think it was Rex that said, holy sh-. Golly Martha, I'll say. They said, this is really out there. And we all agree with it. But we should run it by George, who wasn't in on the editorial board meeting. So went up to George, ran it by him. He had some questions. And he said, if it's how you all feel, go ahead.
Wow.
And we did. There may have been, after we did that, maybe one or two other newspapers in the country that wrote something similar. But I don't know that anybody had done anything like that before we did. So it was way outside the box. And it was absolutely the right thing in retrospect. I still think it was the smartest editorial I ever wrote.
Now, let's look towards the future. What's the next step here? You're not leaving us, really.
No. It worked out really well. You know, it was not easy to think about entirely cutting the cord. There was a part of me that wanted to stay at least until the next presidential election. I watched a lot of people go crazy in 2016 because they had no voice. They could just, you know, yell at the television. They could yell at each other. They could, you know, post angry things on social media, but they didn't have something that I was very privileged to have, which was, you know, the voice that I had as an editorial page editor. It wasn't just my voice. It was the voice of the editorial board. But, you know, I got to write that voice. Casey said, look, would you want to do a column? Writing a column had kind of been the one thing I didn't do as a journalist that I had always wanted to do. So I just very coolly said, yeah, I could fit that in. I could try. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be writing a couple editorials a week. I'm a member of the editorial board still. I got a new title, editor at large. It sounds like I'm on the lam.
He's at large.
Yeah.
Now, before I let you go, you wanted to close the loop on something.
So I mentioned the really awful letter that I wrote to the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So all these years later, I'm in an editorial board meeting, our morning editorial board meeting. Akeem, Tina Tyler, Rex Smith, and Harry Rosenfeld. And we were waiting to get started. I think somebody hadn't arrived. And I said, and it just hit me. I said, Harry, when did you start at the Times Union? Because Harry used to be the city editor of the Washington Post.
And, a very famous city editor at the Washington Post.
Very famous.
Had a little something to do with Woodward and Bernstein and Watergate there.
And he was played by Jack Warden in a movie. How many people can say that?
Right?
That's great. Harry and I got to be very good sparring partners on the editorial board. He's a fun, you know, he's a nice guy. I mean, to me, he was, just an old Jewish grandfather to me, but mm-hmm. also one who, you know, loves to challenge people and loves to challenge you to, think harder and not be lazy about your opinions. So we're at the beginning of this meeting, or just before the meeting, and I said, Harry, when did you come to the Times Union? And I think it was 1980 that he came to the paper to be editor. I said, you know, it's very possible that you read my application letter. You were the city editor at the Washington Post when I applied for a job there. And he said, you know, that's very possible. And I said, and you didn't give me a job, Harry. And he looked at me and he said, I guess I didn't. And he said, I don't remember it. I said, well, maybe you'll remember this letter.
Oh, boy.
And I said, in that letter, I said, I cringe to even tell you this today. I said, something to the effect that I'm just out of college and desirous of a job in journalism. And he looked at me and he said, "You said you were desirous?" I know. And I said, "Harry, I know. I would have thrown the letter away too." He said, "Yeah."
Sounds like definitely. A pass from Jane Austen.
Exactly. It was just so formal. It was so much the wrong word. And I said, "Well, all these years later, I guess I made an impression on you when I came in for my job interview." Because he was my last interview when I came in. And he said, "Yeah, you did. I remember our interview."
So in a way, you got the job you were going for the whole time.
Exactly. I just didn't know it was Harry Rosenfeld I was going to work for, not the Washington Post.
Oh, that's a great way to end it. I love it. And yeah. Because you're not leaving us, there'll probably be plenty more opportunities for you to be on this podcast. So this is not a farewell. This is just a transition, I guess.
Sounds good to me.
All right, that's it for this week. I'm Jessica Marshall. We'll be back next week with another look inside the newsroom here at the Times Union. In the meantime, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, or head on over to timesunion.com for the latest news and features. The Eagle is a production of the Times Union. It's produced and edited by me, Jessica Marshall, with help from the Times Union digital team and the newsroom. Special thanks this week to Susan Mihalik and Jay Jochnowitz for their contributions to this episode. And stay tuned. We've got a brand new podcast series by the Times Union that's debuting very soon. Here's a taste of what's in store. November 1st marks the 15th anniversary of the day 12-year-old Jalique Rainwalker vanished. His disappearance from rural upstate New York was ruled a probable child homicide. But no one has ever been charged, and his body has never been found. This is Rainwalker, The Lost Boy. I'm Jessica Marshall.
And I'm Wendy Lippertor.
In this podcast from the Times Union, we'll take a deep dive into this mystery, the case of a missing child that has unsettled New York's Capital Region and beyond for more than a decade.
Episode 1. Red Robin.
Before we begin, a word of caution. The story we are about to tell involves situations that may be very disturbing to some listeners. So please take care as you listen.